Car parts eventually wear out and need to be replaced. Now, with advances in medicine, it's getting more and more like that for replacing parts of our bodies, too. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we examine what's involved with joint replacements. We'll talk with an Iowan who had both knees replaced just 10 weeks ago. We'll also talk with an orthopedic surgeon about advances in the field and with a physical therapist about the challenges of recovery and how patients respond differently. Have you had a joint replaced? How did your recovery go? What challenges did you face? Join our conversation. First, a look at this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We all know and are frustrated that parts in our cars need to be replaced every once in a while as wear and tear takes its toll. More and more, our bodies, too, can be thought of as vehicles in need of repair or replacement parts. And medical researchers are creating more and better replacement parts for all types of body parts. Artificial lenses and implants for improved eyesight, for example. And on the frontier of replacement parts, 3D printing is coming into its own, being used to build bio-artificial body parts and organs. In fact, perhaps one day in the not too distant future, regenerative medicine researchers will be able to recreate and transplant a functioning bio-artificial heart. That's in the future. This hour is more about the long-established replacements, joint replacements. The number of people checking into human repair shops is way up. For instance, the number of total knee replacements has risen sharply over the past decade, with the greatest increase among people younger than 65. Listen to this. Nearly 5 million Americans are currently living with artificial knees. In just a few minutes, we'll talk with an orthopedic surgeon about the, dare I say, cutting edge of this field. But first, let's talk with an Iowan who had both knees replaced about 10 weeks ago. John Little of Iowa City is 62 years old. He's also notably an Ironman triathlete. And between the ages of 55 and his current age, he completed 15 Ironman triathlons and completed the World Championship triathlon in Hawaii last October. John Little, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben.
Tell us, what was it like getting around just before your double knee replacement?
It was hard. That's the number one thing. I was more and more in more pain, harder and harder to get up and down stairs. It was difficult. I was able still to do my power walking with knee braces, but without big knee braces on, I had trouble getting around.
In fact, incredibly, your last, what is it, two Ironman triathlons, you did the walking, running part with knee braces.
In the last three, I did them with power walking with braces.
Mm-hmm. Pain relievers, medications there to relieve your pain? Or a few of those, I imagine.
A few. I'm not interested. I would rather not take those sorts of things if I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how long did it take before being aware that you could get your knees replaced until you actually did it? Was there a contemplation phase there?
I knew it was coming. My mother had her knees replaced, and my legs looked just like hers, and my knees looked just like hers.
How would that be?
And I just it's
how would they look? I mean, describe.
Well, I was bow-legged.
Bow-legged.
There's no question about it. If you saw my legs before the knee replacement, I looked like that proverbial cowboy with bow legs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you went to the doctor and had him look at this, had him X-ray. What did the doctor say?
Actually, this was interesting. I thought my surgeon looked at the X-rays, and her exact words were, "I don't know how you get around."
Really? And yes. She wasn't exaggerating.
No, she wasn't exaggerating at all. 11 days later, I had both knees replaced.
Mm-hmm. What was the condition of your knees? Describe what they looked like. What made your surgeon say that? What made her say
well,
that?
Bow-legged, very bow-legged. And, you know, people say, oh, I have bone on bone in my knee. Well, if you look at my X-rays, which I posted on Facebook for friends and sent around, if you look at my X-rays, you can see what bone on bone means.
Okay. So the day of the replacement arrives. What was that like? You went in how early into the procedure, the night before or the same day?
No, same day. I was in the hospital for 3 days altogether. So it's a normal surgical procedure that you go through all the steps, right?
And they put you under, and what was it like waking up?
I'm not sure I remember exactly, but because those 3 days in the hospital are kind of a blur, and then the next 3 weeks at home are a bit of a blur as well.
So your recovery, what they had you do, how soon did you start with the therapy to get those muscles back in action and get your knee back working?
Good question. Started in the hospital during those first 3 days. They want to get you up and moving those, bending those legs just as quickly as you can. And then I came home on a Monday afternoon, and I was with the physical therapist Tuesday morning.
In the hospital, what actually are they having you do?
Well, get up and walk is a big step.
As simple as that.
I mean, with somebody helping you and holding you and all of that, of course. But as simple as that right away. And try to, you know, bend the legs to the extent, bend the knee to the extent you can. I just remember them. They wanted me up and walking as soon as I possibly could.
And 10 weeks on, what do you have for, do you have lingering pains at all? Or
I'm doing very well. I'm swimming and I'm riding a bike and doing okay. Nighttime, a little bit of pain, no question about it. And I wear out much easier than I did before the surgery. I've got to build back my strength, but I'm doing real well, thank you.
How do your knees now, 10 weeks after the replacement, compared with your knees right before the replacement?
Oh, good question. Well, for one thing, my legs are straight. I'm not bow-legged anymore.
You got rid of the cowboy look.
Got rid of the cowboy look. I actually gained a quarter inch in height. We measured exact quarter inch. I'm a quarter inch taller than I was 10 weeks
ago.
And
that was just from, is that from the replacements or from just straightening your legs out?
Good question. You'd have to ask the surgeon that.
Okay. And your range of motion at this point?
I'm well over 130 degrees with each knee. I'm up to about, last it was measured was right at 130, but that was a week ago, and I've improved in the last week, so.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, if you've just joined us, we're talking about joint replacement this hour in the larger context of increasing number of body parts that we can replace, just like our car goes into the shop to get some new tires or a new muffler or some new brakes. Body parts are becoming more and more replaceable. John Little just underwent double knee replacement 10 weeks ago. We'd like to reach out to you either on our social media or give us a call. Have you had a joint or other body part replaced? How did your recovery go, and what challenges did you face? How much has it improved your quality of life? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us river2river@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Incidentally, you mentioned the x-ray. You were good enough to give us the x-ray. We put that on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page.
Good.
So your knees are famous.
Oh, good.
We have a before and after picture of your knees there, so you can compare that. If you're thinking about a similar procedure, perhaps a loved one, go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Also joining us now, Dr. Nicholas Neuser. He is an orthopedic surgeon and assistant professor at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, joining us by phone. Dr. Neuser, welcome to our program.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. Now, it was amazing to read that about 5 million Americans walk around on artificial knees. Hundreds of thousands of these total knee replacements performed in this country each year. The numbers rising so dramatically just in the last few years. Is this a routine type of procedure?
Well, it is quite routine. We do quite a few every year, as you mentioned, probably in the ballpark of 700,000 to 800,000 per year now. And even a few years ago, I had one of the surgeons I trained under say that knee replacement was only slightly behind the haircut in terms of common procedures.
So you heard John Little's case here. Is his typical, or did he have a little bit more of an extreme case than you usual have?
Well, relatively speaking, it sounds typical. I think perhaps some folks would have gone to investigate sooner. It sounds like the knees were quite severely affected by arthritis, although if he was still able to perform triathlons and a lot of walking, he was probably right about in the average of where people start to feel like a lot of their daily activities and quality of life are impacted by arthritis, and I think appropriately sought to do something about it.
John, jump in here.
Thank you. I was just going to say you're absolutely right, of course, about doing something about it. I was having my knees drained every 3 months for the last 2 years. I'd had a number of procedures, synvisc injections.
Drained of what?
Drained of excess fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was undergoing quite a number of procedures over the 2 or 3 years leading up to the point where it was time to do it.
Doctor, can you tell us what's happening in the knee that causes it to have to be replaced? What's wearing out?
Well, the cartilage surface gets worn off, and as was mentioned, a very typical description, the most common risk factor that leads to arthritis is a malalignment of the knee. So a very bow-legged or knock-kneed knee would be the most common knee in which we'd see arthritis. And the second factor would be weight, which is in less bow-legged or knock-kneed knees, the main factor that usually leads to arthritis. But the very bow-legged leg causes an overload of the cartilage, particularly on the inside half of the knee, and the cartilage wears thin and wears out and leads to the bone contacting the bone on both sides of the joint. And cartilage has no nerve ending, so it doesn't hurt when it rubs together. And bone has millions of nerve endings, so it's very painful when it gets to the point where it's rubbing together.
How unusual is it, doctor, to have both knees replaced at the same time?
At the same time, I wouldn't say is extremely common. Some surgeons favor it over others. At the last large meeting of hip and knee replacement surgeons that I went to, there was about 6 to 7% of knees were being done both at the same time. And overall, about 50% of people who have a knee replacement will eventually have the other side done, or will have the side done in sequence at 6 weeks or 6 months or even a year apart.
So you have an advantage. You have one OR visit. What are the disadvantages to having both knees done, hips?
Well, there is some evidence that the more scary complications that can happen, even though they're very rare, actually happen a little bit more than twice as much when we do both knees together. And so you might expect the things like a heart attack or stroke after surgery, which are extremely rare, to be a double incidence when doing both knees, when in actual fact they're more like 3 to 4 times higher. And that's what gives some reluctance to doing both knees at the same time very frequently. And so it's very nice to have triathletes and very healthy folks come in and potentially go through both knees together. But a lot of times there are other medical issues at play, diabetes or a history of heart disease or other things like that. And those people are just as welcome to have knee replacement, but often make us shy away from doing them both at the same time.
Dr. Nicholas Noizer is with us, an orthopedic surgeon, assistant professor at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. John Little with us as well. He had a double knee replacement just 10 weeks ago. He's recovering nicely. If you have had a joint or body part replaced, let us know. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. Or call us toll-free, 1-866-780-9100. Tell us, how did your recovery go? What challenges did you face especially? You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. Kristen emails us with her experience. I had both of my knees replaced 4 years ago when I was 43 years old. My knees were bad from playing soccer at college and from genetics. I did everything that was required of me medically before the surgery, physical therapy, injections, wraps, and more. Nothing helped as it was bone on bone. Sounds much like you, John Little. The knee replacements were the best thing I ever did. I couldn't walk. My quality of life was going downhill drastically. Now I can keep up with my teenage son, camp, hike, and ride my motorcycle. I will not hesitate to replace these knees in another 20 to 30 years if need be. Well, she leads right into a very good question, Dr. Noizer. How long do your replacement knees last?
Well, the best we can tell now, I think the numbers that we tend to describe to patients when they ask the same question is there's about a 1% per year attrition. So most would describe a 90% success rate after 10 years and a continued 80% success rate after 20 years.
When you have it, are there a certain small percentage of people that just the surgery doesn't work out, it has to be redone, or it just isn't right for certain people?
Well, there is a huge variety of certain complications that can happen. There is a percentage of people who don't have the expected pain relief or great results that we would like. That's very frustrating, of course. There's a preconceived notion that knee replacements work 100% of the time in 100% of folks. But most large studies with registries or large databases have shown about 85, possibly 90% of what you might call home runs, with 10 or 15% of folks still having some pain or some discomfort or an inability to go back to all the activities they wanted. And actually, that's an area very much under investigation to try and pinpoint why those patients don't have quite the home run as most others.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas, or what are the theories?
Well, the different theories, one of the good theories that was put forth about 6 years ago in a landmark paper was some of the expectations that people are coming into. I think there's a bit of a thought, and I even use this in my descriptions to patients, that I'm using a time machine to go back to when people are 15 years old and transplanting that knee into their knee today, and it's not quite that miraculous. It's still an artificial knee and has certain things that it can do, but a few things that it can't do or that'll be uncomfortable doing with it. And I think the other thing is there's also now more and more being done, and they're being done so frequently that sometimes they're being done very early in the stages of arthritis, very far away from bone on bone yet, and sometimes that's, I think, a little bit too eager, and the results are maybe not quite as dramatic, and so not felt to be such a fantastic improvement by the patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, talk about that, the trends here. The trends are for younger and younger people to have these replacements?
Yeah, the most recent studies that we have are that the demographic between 40 and 55 years old are the patients having the highest increase in number of knee replacements that are happening. One that we have to be real, or a risk factor that we have to be realistic on why that may be happening, is also the increasing weight in the population in general. So with weight being a high risk factor, we're seeing more and more people who are having that excess weight, if we want to call it that, lead to earlier and earlier arthritis and having knee replacements younger and younger. But the knee replacement doesn't instantly lead to reduction in weight, and putting that weight across the knee replacement for many years can certainly lead it to fail sooner and sometimes not have the as good a result as we would want.
Okay, so John Little, you, in this case, it seems you had two things. You had the genetics of it. You said your mm-hmm. mother had a knee replaced, but also being an Ironman triathlete is about the most trying thing other than a marathon runner, which is part of the triathlete. so you really put your knees to the test, so you're a prime candidate.
I think there's no question that I did use them extensively, but I think it's clearly genetics is the strongest background. As the doctor explained, I end up bow-legged, I end up causing a lot of arthritis. I know that I was told that I had stage 4 arthritis in both knees 5, 6, 7 years ago. I mean, it's been for a long time, so it's didn't happen overnight.
Okay, join our conversation as we discuss this hour: joint replacement, hips, knees, and so forth. If you have questions about those, perhaps you've had one of those joints replaced, let us know how it's been going for you. 1-866-780-9100. Leanne is joining us from Davenport. Hi, Leanne. Have you had a replacement?
Yes, I have.
When did it happen, and what was replaced?
July of last year, my right knee was replaced.
And how are you getting along?
I'm getting along quite well.
Mm-hmm. What were the biggest challenges for you during the recovery?
Well, I really didn't know what to expect, but I had very good physical therapy, and they got me up right away, and I used the ice machine to keep my leg moving, and it was very good all the way around.
Mm-hmm. So how would you say your knee is today? As good as a 15-year-old, if that's our reference?
Well, I might consider 16-year-old, but...
you'd take that, all right?
I'd take that.
Is it as good as when you were younger?
Almost. I think I'm back to about 95% now.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, wonderful. Thank you for sharing your story, Leanne.
Thank you.
Alan is with us in Davenport. Alan, do you have a replacement or thinking about a replacement?
No, but my mother has, and she's now 85. So I'm wondering just what complications are added to the fact that she waited almost 20 years before actually having the surgery.
Good question. Dr. Neuser, how long should you wait? Is there an age in which you're too young or too old?
Well, I don't think there's necessarily an age at which you're too young or too old. to put it in perspective, the most common thing that I hear after it's been done is, I should have done this 5 years ago, so that may help. There is some evidence that after age 70, I think as with all other things, some of the complications that happen after knee replacement do go up in percentage. But overall, there's really not a too old on my list, especially it's maybe using the expression, it's not how old or young you are, but how young you feel. The oldest patient I've replaced both knees on is 94, but was a very spry 94, and he's doing fantastically well. And so I think it's really a personal decision to decide when the time has come that enough daily activities and quality of life factors are being affected by the knee. I like to ask patients when it is that they've come to the point that they're thinking about their knee from sun up to sundown. Maybe it's right time to do something about it. And then we have all our patients very carefully cleared by a medical staff that really tries to optimize all the medical conditions and put everybody in tip-top shape before surgery, and we usually proceed with very few issues.
Mm-hmm. We have to go to break in just a few moments, but perhaps you can give us an idea of the cost involved here. Of course, there are different insurances out there. What is a range of costs that people can look forward to for a knee replacement or a hip replacement?
Well, a hip and knee replacement, both are considered such successful surgeries that just about every insurance coverage, including Medicare and Medicaid, because these surgeries get most people back to work and back to productive and spending members of society, that they're just about all covered. And so what you'd usually end up with is your copay or your coinsurance typically, and that will usually max out with the surgery. I won't lie about that. But the ballpark figure that's usually labeled on the overall cost in terms of what the entire surgery cost is somewhere between $15,000 and $25,000.
$15,000 to $25,000 per knee or per hip.
Correct.
Something like that. How long does the procedure take?
It takes about an hour. When you do fairly frequent and the knee is fairly straightforward, it takes about 50 to 60 minutes and then some closing time.
Okay. We want to talk about that also when we come back. Oh, by the way, the new health insurance law, of course, in place. How has that impacted this area of joint replacement?
Not very much, in fact. It's continued to consider joint replacement a very successful surgery that has a huge improvement in quality of life. And as mentioned, getting people back to work and back into productive functions in society, and really hasn't made much of a difference.
Mm-hmm. So even with the fact that more people have medical insurance now and the expansion in Medicaid?
I think it's only improved from that point of view, yes. I think it's brought more patients into the ability and availability of having a joint replacement at a place where they're able to go through with it.
Okay, Dr. Nicholas Noizer, please stay with us, orthopedic surgeon, assistant professor at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. We're talking about joint replacement this hour. Perhaps you have a story to tell about your joint being replaced. How did it go? How did the recovery go? What challenges did you face? Is your new joint, your knee or your hip, working as well as a 15 or 16-year-old? Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. You can see John Little's knees before and after his double knee replacement. Go to Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. When we come back, we'll talk with a physical therapist from Mercy Hospital in Des Moines. She works with people doing rehab after joint replacement. That's when we come back. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support comes from the
joint replacement is our topic for this hour. Hips and knees replaced. Amazingly, nearly 5 million Americans are currently living with artificial knees. Joining us this hour, John Little of Iowa City, 62 years old, underwent a double knee replacement just 10 weeks ago. He's been telling us how that process has been going, the recovery and so forth. Dr. Nicholas Noizer is with us, orthopedic surgeon and assistant professor at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And also joining us this hour, Nicole Nigg joins us by phone, director of rehabilitation at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. Nicole, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So we're on to the recovery phase. We've ushered you in. Tell us, when you're rehabbing after a surgery like this, let's take a knee replacement, how long is the process and what is happening in that process?
Well, they start right away while they're here in the hospital, learning some exercises, as John mentioned, getting up, walking right away, making sure they can do their transfers, getting in and out of bed, the types of things they're going to need to be able to do to go home. With knee replacements, we're certainly working on trying to get their range of motion back so that they're able to bend their knee enough to be able to go up and down the stairs or maybe get in and out of a car. Once they leave the hospital, the majority of our patients go home, and they either do some outpatient physical therapy where they will continue working on the same exercises, or some of them may have home care where a therapist may come into their house and do similar sorts of things. I would say the entire process kind of depends on the person. Generally, people are getting up and around pretty well after 6 to 8 weeks. Some it may take a little longer and some a little quicker.
Mm-hmm. What are the biggest challenges you face as someone coaching this recovery? I suppose it depends on the personality of the patient a lot.
It sure does. It always depends on personalities. It's great to find a therapist that you mesh pretty well with. And a lot of it depends on the patient's activity before they had surgery. As you mentioned, you know, John was very active, and so he had certain expectations that he wanted to get back to those types of things. That's going to be a little different than someone who might be 80 or 85 years old. Likely, they're probably not going to be going back to triathlons, but, you know, they may be content. They might want to do some gardening or, you know, just be able to play with their grandkids. So it's always important to find out what the patient's goal is.
Okay, your questions about joint replacement and recovery, 1-866-780-9100. Patricia is joining us from just across the border in Galena. Hello, Patricia, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am.
So we're getting some strange sounds there, maybe bumping the phone there. Tell us, have you had a replacement, a knee replacement, perhaps?
In 2007, I had my right knee replaced in Richmond, Virginia. In 2011, I had my left knee replaced in Shaker Heights, Ohio. And last year, I had my left hip replaced in Dubuque, Iowa.
Mm. How have those gone?
Well, fantastic. And I just, what I really want to share is that I went into it knowing that you have to do the therapy. And I say that because my husband is a pastor, and the people who will not cooperate in therapy don't get a good success. You can blame it on the doctor, you can blame it on the therapist, but you have to do it yourself. It hurts in the beginning, but it is such a marvelous experience to get a full range of motion. I mean, I was walking without a cane, totally independently, in 3 weeks after both of my knees, and last year after the hip replacement.
That's wonderful news, Patricia. Nicole Nigg, would you second Patricia's there, that you've got to expect some very difficult days in your rehab?
Yeah, I would certainly agree. I think whenever possible, we try to educate patients prior to the surgery. In our facility, we do a preoperative class full of education. It teaches patients some exercises and just more or less what to expect. I think that the better prepared patients are going into it, they do better afterwards.
Mm-hmm. John Little, something tells me as a Ironman triathlete, you have dealt with pain many times in your life. So the recovery that you had, the exercises that you had to do, were you ready for that?
I was ready for it, and I overdid it.
You overdid it?
I was told by one person after another, just due to my personality, don't overdo it. Sure enough, the very first week after surgery, I overdid my exercises and made myself hurt more than I needed to. I did it again in week 3 and week 5. I overdid it several times, but I'm pushing ahead, doing fine.
Okay, Nicole Nigg, John overdid it. You have patients like that?
All the time.
All the time. So what is overdoing? Why is that bad? What's happening?
Well, sometimes your body's just not quite ready for that much stress after surgery. Even though it is a fairly routine procedure, it is still a major surgery, and your body needs some time to recover. And so while we're here in the hospital, we're certainly teaching them exercises and encouraging walking, but only a certain number of times a day. We don't want somebody, you know, up there constantly walking all day long, because before you know it, their knee's going to probably have some extra swelling in it, and it's going to cause them some pain.
Mm-hmm. What about the expectations for after the replacement, Nicole? Do most patients have to have a lifestyle change, or can they jump back into an old self, an old set of knees?
Again, I think it really is individualized to the patient. If your plan is to go back to being a runner or a marathoner, you may be able to do that. It's just going to, it may take a little bit longer because functionally you're doing more than just walking, which is what most of our patients are doing. But, you know, we have many patients that are able to go back to riding rag bri or, you know, swimming and all those types of things that are important to them.
Dr. Noizu, here is an email from Mary that I hope you can tackle. My husband was told he needed a hip replacement due to cartilage loss, and his second hip would need a replacement at a later date. He chose instead to have stem cell and platelet injections instead. The stem cells were retrieved from his own bone marrow. This was done last September with great success. Talk about that. Is that widely practiced?
I would not say that's widely practiced. The evidence for stem cell therapies and platelet-rich plasma, which I am assuming is probably the injection that was done, which is retrieval of the bone marrow, and it's spun down, was injected into a certain location. It can be a few different options of what are going on. There's a process of blood supply damage to the bone called osteonecrosis, which has had some success with platelet-rich plasma or other stem cell injections. Cartilage loss has a lot less experience or a lot less evidence with that. There may have been a milder form of cartilage loss, or it may have been fairly early in the arthritis stages and may have responded to an injection of stem cells, although the hard evidence or the scientific evidence behind that is very, very young, in a very infant stage now, and so we certainly don't understand that process as well as we do replacing a joint with metal and plastic, but certainly it's a nice advantage to keep your own hip.
Okay, metal and plastic, you mentioned the substances. What are artificial hips, artificial knees made out of these days?
So the most common, we can start with knees. I'll try to go through it briefly. Knees, the parts that are fixed onto the lower part of the thigh bone and upper part of the leg bone are usually metal, most commonly titanium for the part that goes into the upper leg bone, and a special type of stainless steel called chrome cobalt on the lower part of the thigh bone. There are a couple of options where that metal is a ceramic-coated titanium instead, and then the bearing surface is a cross-linked form of plastic called polyethylene or high molecular weight polyethylene.
Okay, and this artificial knee, is the old knee is simply removed, and then these the upper and lower part of the artificial knee are screwed into the respective bones?
They're fixed in with cement most commonly, although we are going slowly but surely to uncemented designs, which have pores on the undersurface of the metal where the bone literally grows into the pores. And so that's where we are with total hips primarily. Those are uncemented devices that are fixed into the pelvis bone and in the canal of the thigh bone with special coatings on the metal where the bone grows into the metal after about 6 weeks to 3 months.
Mm.
On the knee side, we're still fixing more on with cement. And I think a little bit of the notion that people have is that we remove completely the entire lower end of the bone and upper end of the leg bone, lower end of the thigh bone and upper end of the leg bone. We're really just skimming the surface off. We're just taking 5 or 6 millimeters off each surface, the front surface, the lower end surface, and the back surface, and then capping that with sort of a metal cap. Or on the top part of the leg bone, we're taking off an 8 to 10 millimeter thickness and putting a metal plate on top of that. So we're taking very little bone off, in fact, when we do a knee replacement.
As an orthopedic surgeon, what is the most exciting area of advancement in joint replacement that you see, that you've experienced?
Well, I think a little bit that was discussed by Nicole and even by John. I think the biggest advances recently are things that we're doing around the knee replacement. So a lot of the preoperative teaching, we like to use the word prehab, and right around the time of surgery, we're now using a lot of excellent pain relief method so that patients have very little pain around the time of surgery. I get all my patients and all our group here at the university actually get all our patients up on the day of surgery, if at all possible, with physical therapy. And we're able now to send patients home the next day very frequently. Approximately 50% of our patients are going home the next day or just about ready to do that. And as far as the implants themselves, it's really the bearing surfaces in terms of resisting wear and trying to last longer and longer into the future, whereas wear is our most common reason for redoing these replacements at 15 or 20 or 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Let's try to get as many callers in the remaining minutes we have as we talk about joint replacement. Let's talk to Charlie. Charlie's calling from Des Moines. Hello, Charlie.
Hey, Ben. How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to call in and talk. I've been getting into running marathons. My girlfriend and I have run 5 over the past 3 years, and both sets of our parents have kind of come up with the same warning, saying, you know, careful, you guys are going to wear out your knees. And I've done a little research and, you know, not really sure what the consensus is, but what is the exposure? Is wearing out your knees something that actually happens, or do knee replacements happen because of other factors like, you know, your heritage and things like that? So
we touched on this a little bit earlier, but Dr. Neuser, give Charlie an answer there, please.
So the activity level, as he's referring to, we tend to describe that as activity level, is much less important in your likelihood of developing knee arthritis than the alignment, so whether you're bow-legged or quite knock-kneed, and weight. So it comes in definitely behind those. If you run a marathon every month versus if you cycle a long way every month or swim a long way every month, you probably are more likely to wear out your knees at some point and perhaps go on to knee replacement. But again, that factor is much lower than your genetics and your alignment and your weight.
What about running technique, for instance, and the shoes that you wear? Does that play any role at all?
I don't think there's a lot of evidence behind that. I think if you set yourself up or get the shoe wear that's going to allow you to run the most comfortably, I think that would be the most important thing from that point of view. I don't think there's any evidence that a particular type of shoe or a particular style of running would lead to preserving your knees for longer.
Okay, Charlie, great questions from Des Moines. Thank you very much. And it sounds like you can keep on running those marathons. Steve is with us in Des Moines. Steve, you've had a knee surgery, knee replacement?
Yes.
How did that work? How did it work out for you?
Well, I decided to be the negative guy here, but I'm not a negative guy by nature.
You didn't have a good experience.
No, it's actually been replaced. It was replaced in, I believe, is 06, and we kept having a swelling problem with it. And it was even swollen before. And finally, the doctor decided, well, maybe we'll replace the knee and see if it was the new instrument or the type of knee. It was an Proscenium, I believe, or sounds like that. And then that was replaced in 09, 2010, and it didn't cure the swelling. They'd take off 120 to 150 cc's of fluid off my knee every 3 months. And then, 2012, the latter part of the year, I got a darn staph infection in the thing.
Mm.
And they had to take the whole knee out to get rid of the staph infection. So I'm on my third, and it still swells. They don't know. They're clueless on it. They just said, I'm a sweller, what one guy called it.
Okay, Steve, thanks for sharing your experience. I'm sorry it wasn't better than it was.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just thought I'd share it. I got to get the other one done, and I just keep putting it off.
Okay. Thanks, Steve, in Des Moines. Dr. Neuser, of course, you work at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, but we made the comparison to having replacement car parts at the beginning of it. And, of course, when we go get our car fixed, we're very concerned about where we take it to. For someone considering a knee or a hip replacement, what are the questions? What are the things to find out about the provider, the hospital, the medical center that would be providing the medical care and the surgery? What would you want to know as if it were your knees?
Well, I think in general, you really want to seek out a surgeon who has a couple things that mesh along with what you're looking for. I think, first of all, you want to have someone who has a an easy relationship with you, or that seems to have a very open relationship, is open to answering questions and telling you how things would happen if there were to be a complication, if there were to be something that didn't go exactly as planned. I think you also want to seek out someone who does quite a few knee and hip replacements. It doesn't have to be all that they do, but I think someone experienced with that who does them quite frequently on a weekly or monthly basis, does quite a number of them, is perhaps better than just a very rare occasional knee or hip replacement surgeon. There's some evidence to that in the literature that surgeons who do more than 50 a year and hospital centers that do more than 150 a year have better outcomes on average, have lower hospital stays, and sometimes even have lower costs because they kind of create almost an assembly line, not to belittle it, but sort of a very systematic program of how you go through the whole process.
Just a few minutes left. We have several callers and emails. Let me encapsulate several of the callers that have questions about glucosamine, chondroitin, I think, related to that. These are joint supplements. I don't know if we can call them medications. What are they talking about? Why do people take it? Does it really help?
These are nutraceuticals, so they're not medications, as you alluded to. They're over-the-counter supplements. There is one study called the GAIT study, G-A-I-T, that has shown some benefit in very small subsections of people with considered moderate arthritis. Otherwise, the evidence is very little in the glucosamine and chondroitin. I still recommend it. I tell people that there are very few side effects to it, and there's certainly some fairly good anecdotal evidence of individual people or a few groups of people saying it made them feel much, much better. And glucosamine and chondroitin are the building blocks to cartilage. So the thought is that if they can make their way into your joint, they maybe can replenish some of the cartilage.
Nicole Nigg, we talked earlier about how it's been shown that preparing the post-operative phase, preparing for that is really important. You have something called pre-op joint camp. Very quickly, what is that about?
Well, we invite all of the potential surgical candidates, as well as family member or a coach if they want, to come and learn in a pre-op education class. They talk a lot about the different exercises they'll be doing, what types of things to bring to the hospital, what things they should be doing before surgery, and that helps. They also help to explain kind of exactly what's going to happen at the hospital. Talk through our rehab process. We have something called joint camp. That means that the physical and occupational therapists see them either post-op the day they have surgery or the next day, and then they do some group therapy sessions with some other patients where they can kind of learn, they can talk about different experiences. Oftentimes in a group setting, it helps, they kind of push each other, they like to talk about what each other is going through and realize that they're not alone. So we do those types of things, but it's all about trying to help them understand exactly what's going to be happening to them before it actually does.
Mm-hmm. As we close the show, give us a glimpse into the future, Dr. Noizier. What types of research is being done now that when it comes to joint replacements that are it's pointing the way to even better knees, faster recovery in the future? Where will we be in 5 or 10 years?
Well, I think the rapid recovery you just mentioned is one of the big areas of focus, and so what that's leading to is outpatient knee replacement and hip replacement. So if we can make these preoperative joint classes as educational as they can be and have patients as ready as they can be and allay their fears that there's going to be significant pain or significant issues going through the knee, there's a few prior papers showing that the fear of pain is one of the most common concerns going into the knee replacement, then I think we'll be able to have more and more patients be able to do this through an outpatient setting and within a couple of weeks be really back to normal and not need a prolonged hospital stay and a lot of intensive hospital care, but do most of that at home.
Okay, let's close with a little sound of a knee in particular of our guest, John Little, his new artificial knee. We recorded that a little bit before he came in. Let's listen to it. You're just moving your knee here, right?
Just shaking my leg.
Let's listen to it. Dr. Noizier, does that sound like a healthy knee to you? Artificial knee?
About 80 to 90% of knees will make noises, and sometimes those noises will last up to 6 months to a year. Those will often decrease. Because there's still fluid in the knee, it makes the noises echo louder. And the main issue with knees is that the knee parts are not linked together. The lower part and the upper part are not actually linked together. So there are stoppers and there are areas where those parts come together and make clicks and sounds like that. So it's actually quite normal.
I was going to ask John if he had a marble collection with him today when he walked in the door. Just kidding, of course. Dr. Nicholas Noizer, thank you very much. Orthopedic surgeon, assistant professor at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Thank you for your expertise, doctor.
My pleasure.
And for your expertise as well, Nicole Nigg, physical therapist in Des Moines at Mount Mercy Medical Center. Thank you, Nicole.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And John Little, continued success with your recovery. Is there another Ironman triathlon in your future?
I hope so. We'll see.
Okay, thanks for coming in and sharing about your double knee replacement 10 weeks ago.
You're welcome.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth. Also, thanks to Julia Davis. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow is Wednesday. That must mean it's Politics Day. Of course, we're going to talk about Rand Paul. He's just declared his candidacy for 2016. And the debate in Congress over the framework agreement over Iran's nuclear program. That's tomorrow on this program. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.